Hey, and welcome to Success Starts Here, the place where stories and experiences will inspire and empower you to strive for your own success, whatever that means to you. I'm Regina Peterbergsky, and I invite you to join me in learning from fellow travellers and experts across a variety of fields, including business, health, mental health, parenting, finance, goal setting, and more. So grab yourself a coffee and let's dive in. And welcome back to episode 7 of Success Starts Here. In this episode, I'm chatting with Sarah Dashfield, and we talk about her incredible journey from corporate life to creating Soul Adventurers, which is a business empowering women through transformative experiences. From fashion buying to entrepreneurship, she found success in e-commerce while traveling from Alaska to Argentina in an RV. It was a fascinating story. I think you'll be inspired as she shares her secrets to growth, overcoming challenges, and staying true to her passions. It's all about embracing change and pushing boundaries. Oh, and a little PS, as we recorded this conversation a little while ago, you'll hear us talk about Viva Vida. However, Sarah has actually changed the name of her business since then, and it's now Soul Adventurers. Enjoy the conversation. So today I'm joined by the lovely Sarah Dashfield. And Sarah is someone who left the corporate world of global buying and merchandising at some pretty impressive brands, including Habitat, Pottery Barn, Restoration Hardware, etc., to focus on creating an amazing life and business from the inside out rather than the outside in. This led her on an internal journey to connect with herself first and then create the life she wanted to live. With her passion for travel at the forefront of this connectedness and alignment, she spent 4 years building and selling an online business whilst, and listen to this, traveling from Alaska to Argentina in an RV, overlanding from Ghana to Timbuktu, and driving an Indian rickshaw 3,000 miles from Rajasthan to Kerala. That's absolutely amazing. Now passionate to share what she's learned during this time, Sarah set up her company Vida Viva Adventures to curate transformational adventures in awe-inspiring wilderness for expansion-minded women looking to go deeper into their own personal journey. Welcome, Sarah.
Well, thank you, Regina. So nice to be here.
Awesome. I'm so excited about this conversation. So today I want to talk about success. And, you know, what that means to you. And I think from reading that little introduction, it's pretty clear what it might mean, or clear to me what it might mean. But let's go back a little bit and tell me about your childhood, where you grew up, what your parents did, how that was like.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Well, I'm a Brit, as you can probably hear from the accent. Mm-hmm. My mum and dad, well, I was born in a place called Cheltenham, which is in a beautiful part of the UK in the Cotswolds. Mm-hmm. But then my dad, he actually worked for the Coal Board back in the day.
Coal Board, okay.
Yeah, he was a scientist, so he was always working on their fuel efficient and smokeless fuels. So he was quite at the forefront of the moving away from coal, so that was really good. Anyway, he got moved around the country a lot when we were growing up. So, you know, we lived in the outskirts of London, we lived in near Birmingham, we lived in a place called Nuneaton. So we were all over the place. And, you know, I think my mum and dad were, you know, we went to Scotland for summer holidays, and
Scotland for summer? Is that sort of like the opposite direction?
They did not venture very far. I think I got my first flight with dad to France, and we did that once, and that was it. So I really didn't come from, you know, it was kind of middle-class background, I guess.
Did your mum work?
No, mum was a housewife, brought up her two kids, my brother and me, and so very sort of stable. UK-based upbringing.
Right. So you didn't sort of see sort of entrepreneurism in your day-to-day life. So being an entrepreneur was not something that you were aware of or they had experience of. That's interesting, because I always find it fascinating how people become entrepreneurs, you know, what that path is. So walk me through your path to being an entrepreneur. What did that look like?
Yeah. I mean, honestly, I think I had something ingrained in me from an early age, because when I was first even deciding which degree to go for, travel was at the forefront. I was thinking, what can I do that will allow me to see a bit more of the world? And that was always a thing. And so I decided to get into buying. I mean, to me, that sounded like a really glamorous job.
So product buying for gotcha.
And I was thinking about fashion, actually, at that point, you know, getting into fashion buying. And I ended up doing a really obscure course in an obscure college in the north of England called Huddersfield Polytechnic, as it was then, now a university. Doing a degree, 4-year degree called textile marketing.
Right.
Yeah. So I had that itch for travel then. And my first job was with Marks and Spencer's that everyone's heard of.
Well, you know, in Australia, not necessarily everybody's heard of Marks
and
Spencer's.
Well, that's true. That's true.
But I certainly have. And I'm sure if you don't know Marks and Spencer's, if you're listening to this, Google it, look it up. It's a very famous, I guess it's sort of like a Meijer. Maybe not quite like a Meijer, but Marks and Spencer's tends to be all their own brands rather than bringing in other people's brands. So I guess that's the difference in the offering of the product in store. Yeah. But in terms of the layout and the style of store, I guess it translates to in Australia, I guess, in terms of like a Meijer. Certainly not a David Jones.
No.
So it's sort of like a mid-range. So better than a Kmart or a Target, but not quite a David Jones. But always, I used to love shopping at, in fact, I still do last year. In fact, this time last year I was in the UK. I had to top up on some of my Marks and Spencer undies. You know, they're the best knickers.
The best knickers. And in fact, because of those knickers, I had trips to Israel, I had trips to India. You know, it was interesting. It was a good first start. And then from there, I moved on to Habitat, which was much more me. And that's a home furnishings retailer founded by Terence Conran, who's a big...
Oh, Habitat, of course, Terence Conran, yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's passed away now, sadly, but he was just a great influence and on the whole of the UK high street in a sort of modern kind of contemporary way. Back then in the 60s, actually, that's when it started. Anyway, so that one was, and it was really the one that propelled my journey for everything that was new and exciting. I mean, that was the beyond jobs, and I absolutely loved it at the right age, seeing things for the first time and all of that. And then from there, I moved to the States and I worked for Pottery Barn. And I think they were kind of similar.
So what sort of brought on that move?
Well, I had a good friend at Habitat. She had a very nice American name, Dee Marie Rawlinson. And she moved to Pottery Barn. She went back to the States and got a job in the buying office at Pottery Barn. So it's one of my travel stories, actually, because at the end of my time in Habitat, I faced a big dilemma because very unexpectedly and out of the blue, my boyfriend that I'd been with for 10 years, all of my 20s, he finished with me, and it came out of the blue. I really wasn't expecting it. So I had a little mini meltdown and, you know, still living in the same flat and, you know, still seeing the same people. And it was a very, very difficult time.
Right.
So something came to me at the middle of the night when I was really upset and said, you've just got to get out of this place. You've got to get out of your normal day to day, out of your comfort zone, and have an experience that really pushes you and takes, you know, just totally unexpected. I'm not sure if I had these qualified thoughts back then at the age of 28 or 29, but now I look back on it, I can see this was it. So I went to a travel agent friend and I said, look, just book me somewhere, you know where I travel, just get me somewhere, get me out. And I want to go next week. You know, I don't want any prep time. I just want to get on a plane and go. So he said, right, fine, no problem. And he said, so buy yourself some walking boots, turn up at the airport. I'm bringing you your ticket to add to the excitement. You don't know where you're
going. So you didn't even know where you were going.
No, I had no idea. Here you go. And I suddenly realized I'm going to Marrakesh, Morocco. And I didn't know what I was doing, but I arrived at the Riyadh, the first night's Riyadh at the hotel, lay on my bed, and I could just hear all of those noises around the city, you know, from the mosques, you know,
the mosques, that was right. Yeah, the call to prayer. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oh my God. It was so, I can't tell you, the hairs on the back of my neck just stand up even thinking about it. It felt so exotic. I could smell mm-hmm. the spices. The bathroom had all these beautiful...
And you'd like, never been to Morocco in your buyings for
Hampton? No, never. It was just not a country that was ever on the circuit for regular buying. You know, it mm-hmm. just wasn't. India, yes, but Morocco, no, even mm-hmm. though it's so close to home. But anyway, so there I was. And the next day we picked up and we were off to the Atlas Mountains. And I was pretty fit, I would say, mm-hmm. but I wasn't a hiker or anything like that. Anyway, I get my brand new walking boots on
Uh-oh.
And I start
mountains.
Agony, you can imagine. Not only from the broken hearts, but also the blisters. Were
well, I was going to say, I'm not a hiker, but I know enough to know that if you're going to hike, you don't take new boots. I've seen enough romantic comedy movies about that sort of stuff.
You know what? They weren't even walking boots. They were Dr. Martin boots.
No!
I don't know who they are. Oh, they were the most ridiculous things to go up mountains in. So I was in agony and really struggling. And then, you know, we were sleeping on, you know, mats on floors of Berber villages. Yep. You know, it was quite, you know, it's a low key kind of.
Was this sort of like an Intrepid style group?
It was, yeah, it was probably an Exodus or an Encounter yep. Overland or one of those. Yep. And
the guys who started Encounter Overland are really good friends of mine.
Oh, really? Oh, my God.
Yeah, still to this day, it's a small world.
Yeah. I ended up doing many of those trips. I absolutely love them. But, so then something happened halfway through that trip. I went from, like, desperation, what have I done, to, oh, my God, I'm so glad I gave myself this incredible experience. Mm. And rather than moping, I ended up really looking at where I was and being much more present in the moment, mm-hmm. looking at the mountains, looking at the scenery, looking at the Berber, you know, culture and the villages and the people that we met and the food we were eating. Everything tasted, I don't know, there was something about the vividness of that mm-hmm. trip that really stays with me even to today. And not only that, it informed pretty much the next 30 years of my life.
Mm-hmm.
Because
amazing.
I suddenly had this thing came to me that I hadn't considered when I was in London. Why on earth don't you see if you can move to San Francisco, go and mm-hmm. work for the Williams-Sonoma Group, you know, yep. Ochi Bar, West End, you know, all of those amazing retailers, and Williams-Sonoma as well. And so just try and change your circumstance. And mm-hmm. so 6 months later, I was living the dream in California, amazing lifestyle, snowboarding one weekend, on the beach the next.
Oh, stop it.
It was incredible. I cannot tell you. You're an Australian, so you're probably used to this lifestyle, but
not quite.
We're not. So that was absolutely incredible. And then my career sort of took off from there.
So how long were you with the Williams-Sonoma Group?
I was with them in San Francisco. Well, I mean, I was there for 4 years, but actually spent most of the time in Asia because I then right. pivoted over to sourcing, which I absolutely right. love. I was working with the factories and the designers back in the US. And for me, that's my happy place. You know, yeah. I'm out there, I'm around all sorts of interesting cultures. I'm learning constantly. Oh, and I'm working. You know, it's kind of...
I'm going to tell you a secret.
Go on.
Me too. You know, throw me into a bazaar with little Ellies where nobody speaks English and I don't know a word of their language and I'm in heaven. I got to say, that's one of my favorite sort of places where, you know, the scarier the better. You know, I think the most interesting bazaar I've ever been to is in Sana'a in Yemen, which is, you know, amazing, absolutely amazing. Of course, right now it's not possible to go there, but
yeah,
I got to go sort of in the early 2000s. So, amazing. If you ever have a chance, Yemen.
Yeah, well.
Yemen's one of my top three places to visit. that's a conversation for another time. So what got you out of you know, corporate. I mean, and yes, you were, you were traveling and you were sourcing, but you were still technically corporate, right?
Well, yeah, absolutely. So, and you asked about the entrepreneurial side. So my last position was for Restoration Hardware, and I was running the Shanghai office. I was living and working out there. My husband was able to join me out there as well. And we had 8 years in Hong Kong and Shanghai all together. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, the entrepreneurial journey for me really started at that point, because it had the feeling of my own company, even though mm-hmm. it was a huge, enormous yes. American company. But because I was there and the buyers didn't travel out that much, so it was mm-hmm. kind of my team and my decisions. Mm-hmm. But after 4 years there, I did sort of realize that A, it was time, you know, we did get the itch to come back to the UK. But the dilemma came into my head, because the thing that I really did not want to do was to go back to the UK and then jump into yet another buying, merchandising, sourcing job in corporate UK. Because I think once you've worked for the US companies, it's mm-hmm. actually quite hard to just go back to what you came from. And so I thought, what on earth can I do? And one of the things I realized at that point was location freedom was so important to me, location mm-hmm. freedom. I didn't have to be turning up in an office at a specific time and date every week. Mm-hmm. So I discovered, as I'm sure many of your listeners also went down this path, Amazing Selling Machine.
Yes.
I did ASP4.
I did 5. So you were 6 months ahead of me. Yeah, you were 6 months ahead of me. Although I saw one and didn't buy it. I saw 3, didn't buy it. I wasn't ready. 5.
Yeah, you weren't ready. You didn't do it at the right time. Ready. And 4, yeah. I mean, I was there. And so the tail end of my time in China, I was going through all the modules and
oh, okay, right. So you were still, so yeah. when you bought the training, you were still employed? And so you were still...
Yeah, but I knew we were leaving, and I knew I wanted to train myself to do something different that mm-hmm. was outside of the bricks and mortar, you know, having to be in an office type of work. So I really enjoyed the training, and I got extremely excited that with a laptop and phone, you can do it anywhere in the world. Yes. And that really appeared. Tick, tick. Mm-hmm. And so that led me into thinking, well, if I'm going to do it, I'm going to do it while I'm moving. Mm-hmm. I worked out my niche. I actually got into barbecue products mm-hmm. randomly. Mm-hmm. And I decided with husband and a couple of friends, we were going to fly. So this is me all over. We're leaving China after 8 years. We're moving back to the UK, but I can't quite do that straight. So I have mm-hmm. to plan a 10-month journey in between.
How long?
10 months.
10 months. Right. Okay.
Yeah, 10 months. From Alaska, where we bought an RV, and then mm-hmm. we drove all the way down the Pan American Highway, basically, mm-hmm. all the way through, you know, Canada, Mexico, all the way through Central America, and then down to South America, ending in Ushuaia at the bottom.
Amazing.
So it was the most, while building my business.
And so while you were doing this, so you were building your business, so you know, all the people that complain and say, you know, I can't get out of bed and can't walk to my dining room table to open the computer to build my business. Yeah. Like, you're in an RV, because I'm assuming at a lot of those places, you know, the Wi-Fi was possibly not great. You know, the connectivity is. Yeah. So how did you fit in the work, and where did you, you know, how big did you get your business? Because I think you sold your business, right?
I did, yes. Hmm. Well, I mean, was the early days while I was in the van, and it was extremely, you know, what shall I say? Yeah, I mean, getting Wi-Fi in a lot of places was mm-hmm. next to impossible. But, you know, you can always find, and there are apps for this, of course, and, mm-hmm. you know, people know and people travel through. So you can always find a cafe that has it or whatever it is where you are on the whole. But yes, it wasn't like completely reliable. But I at least got the basics of brand. I was able to place orders while we were away. Obviously, the China side I knew pretty well from my previous experience, because mm-hmm. I'd lived and worked out there. But that part was absolutely fine. And then when I got back to London, I worked on the continue to really launch myself into this business. And after 4 years of working on it, we'd reached the pandemic times. Mm-hmm. And I was extremely fortunate, to be honest, that I chose a niche randomly that was a huge growth niche in the pandemic.
Right, because everybody was home and they were cooking.
Yeah. And they were desperate to get outside. And so obviously, my little barbecue brand really rocketed. And I had, weirdly, two Amazon aggregators in 1 week came to me in the middle of the pandemic. And so, we went through the negotiations and I was able to sell to one of them, who was then, 4 months later, bought by the other one.
The other one. There's a bit of that going on, yes.
Yeah, exactly.
Did you get a seven-figure exit?
I did, yeah, I did. Amazing. In the bank and big smile on my face.
So, I'm just going to stop right there, because it took you 4 years to, build a brand from nothing. I would say probably part-time, because it sounds like you were doing a lot of traveling. So it certainly wasn't weeks. Okay. And to then have a seven-figure exit, pat on the back. That is absolutely amazing. And so that's a combination of two things. Firstly, the business model is, works, and, irrespective of what everybody says, Amazon is dead. I'm sorry. I disagree. There's still people making serious bank using building a brand on Amazon as a business model. And, if you want to know more about that, listen to previous episodes of this podcast. But number two, it was, something in you. So what do you think that it was in you? What specific qualities do you think you have that people that perhaps were not as successful with the same business model didn't have or don't have?
I think first of all, for me, it was something that came from inside, because the feeling of freedom that it gave me was a massive motivational factor for me. I think not the fear of going back into the corporate world, but the knowing that, if I give this up or don't make this successful, that's the alternative, because I need to earn money. It's not like I didn't, at that point, I didn't have to earn money. Obviously, everyone needs to earn money, right? And I was so determined not to go back into what I already knew, because also I'm a sort of person that always has that hang for wanting to learn. I constantly want to do new things. I want to grow. I want to expand. I've met amazing people through doing it. And I think I'm just quite determined,
I'll put that down to determination, the thirst for knowledge, and a very strong why. Yeah?
Yes, a very strong why. Exactly. Yeah, that was really it.
And so what did you, let's talk about success. So when you started that Amazon business, did you have an end goal in mind, or did you just think, I want something that I can travel with my laptop? What was your idea of success at that time when you went from corporate to entrepreneurial?
No, I definitely wanted to make this work. And quite early on, I saw a presentation about building to sell.
Right.
I had that very much in the forefront of my mind at an early stage. So I knew my numbers. I made sure I'd organized the back office, if you like.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And then as it grew, I understood the importance of doing what you're good at and outsourcing what you're not good at.
I think that applies to every business, right? Irrespective of whether you're the Amazon business or, have a retail store, shopfront, or if you're a plumber, or maybe not a plumber, but if you've got any other kind of online business or a business, I think that that's very much, very sound advice, is stick to the stuff that you're good at and don't force yourself to do the stuff that you're not and outsource it. Yeah.
But, I think there's another really important point here, and I think it's about investing in you, because I think, I went through a lot of mental turmoil about, oh, I'm going to go with an agency that's going to help me. PPC was my next. Right. I really did not enjoy doing the PPC. And it's an area that can make or break a brand so easily, because so easy for it to run away with the profits and just eat into it. And I wasn't an expert at it and I didn't enjoy it. So, you know, that's just one thing, but there were quite a few other enormous tasks and advisory roles. So I went with an agency, which meant that I had to give up a chunk of the sale price, you know, a percentage of whatever I sold for, a chunk of that would go to the agency.
Right. Okay.
You know, and I did that and I did it happily because and I know it, that's an investment in me because it meant that I'd be able to scale it much faster. I'd be
so
able
you could focus on what you were good at, which just sounds like it was product development and sourcing, right?
It was. Yeah, exactly. And branding and all of the packaging and all those things that I actually love to do. So I would say kind of the more creative side, but also the negotiating the prices and, you know,
well,
making
sure. Creative too, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, it is. And it really worked. And it was almost like I had my CFO, even though, you know, I had my CFO and we had monthly meetings and we had, you know, we had strategies to, you know, certain tasks in place to get us ready for sale. And that was almost 3 of the 4 years of, of my, was, you know, working with this company to scale it, you know.
Okay. And so, so once you had the exit, right, you got the money sitting in the bank and you go, right, I've achieved success. Now what? Right. So how did your, vision of success and view of success change once you'd sort of achieved this, this big goal that you've been working for 3-4 years? It's like, right, I've done it. Now what? What happened?
It was very surprising. I think that's what I said. And I could never have forecast it, you know, or predicted it. Basically, 3 months or so was brilliant. You know, it was absolutely great. You know, we took some great trips. We went to, you know, we had all this free time. It was really, really nice. But it didn't take long for me to, because we're back here in London again. You know, not such a bad place to be either, by the way. But it's just, there's, but well, my experience was great, got some money in the bank now, so the pressure's off. What am I actually doing every day? What am I, what is my, why am I getting out of bed in the morning to focus on what? And I didn't want, you know, the easy thing would have been to rinse, repeat and do another Amazon brand.
Yes, but I kind which a lot of people do, right?
A lot of people do and all power to them, you know, but that wasn't really what I wanted to do for me because I kind of felt that I'd done it once. I'd learned a lot of new stuff there and I wanted to find something else that was, that pushed me in a different direction. So I went through quite a bit of soul searching at this point. And then I decided once again to invest in myself. And I spent, you know, again, a fair chunk of change, I have to say, to get a coach. And what I did with the coach, which has been really life-changing, is she really extracted out of me, you know, rather than looking at life in very separated terms. So I've got to earn some money, so therefore I've got to do this activity to get the money. Everything else that I do for leisure is kind of separate.
Separate, yeah.
Yeah, this was much more of a joined-up thing. So she spent quite a bit of time at the beginning extracting out of me, you know, my most favorite memories, even if it's just a glimmer of something that was really vivid or really enjoyable or, you know, other things I enjoyed doing. And, well, you can guess the common thread through all of this was not just travel, but real adventure. Because that's really what I've always turned to when I'm at a crossroads and I kind of want a change of direction or, you know, the RV one was a classic example where, you know.
I want to hear about your Indian rickshaw story. That's
oh, my God. Well, yeah, that was actually.
Just quickly, let's talk about that one. I've been to India. I've been to India a couple of times, actually. And I'm reasonably brave, but I don't know if I'd want to be driving a rickshaw 3,000
miles. Oh, my word. We have basically our financial advisor is actually a really good friend of ours, and he is a Kenyan Indian who came over in the 1960s with his mum and dad to London, and he's, you know, he's become a really good friend, and he's so adventurous. And I've always had this thing inside of me. I used to go on buying trips to India a lot. Mm-hmm. And I love the rickshaws and I love getting in them, but you never have a chance to actually drive them and, drive them yourself.
And good reason. If you've been on loads in India, there's a good reason for that.
Oh, yeah. Well, the fact that if you look at the triangle, the cow is obviously the most important at the top of the triangle.
The cow, that's right, exactly.
The cow.
And then there's the goats, and then the elephants, and the camels, and the horses, and whatever else is on the road, and then the cars, the buses, Lord. And the cars, and then the rickshaws are way down the bottom.
Yeah, exactly. So anyway, Yash said I said to Yash said to me, I really want to do a rickshaw journey in India. And he goes, let's organise it then. And so we ended up having 5 rickshaws. Mm-hmm. Each rickshaw fits 3 people. So there were 15 of us. And we started off.
So you managed to convince some other people to do this crazy
thing. It's all his family, my husband, and then all his family, all Riyash's family. And they're all as nuts as each other. And we basically started in Jaisalmer, which is in the Rajasthan desert.
Yes, I've been to Jaisalmer. Really beautiful.
Lovely place, mm-hmm. Really on the edge of the desert, gorgeous. And then we literally had a big car park space, I guess, big mm-hmm. track to practice in. Yeah. And I'm not a motorbike rider, so I had to get used to all the controls, that the gears mm-hmm. and everything. You keep putting my foot down and it's not there. So we were, practicing, taking turns, going around this track, and then let out. And we had basically 2 weeks to do 3,000 kilometers. And yeah, we ended up in
Cochin. Well, you did it in 2 weeks?
I mean, we put our foot down. These are like lawnmowers. They're not motors. They are put, and they break down all the time. Mm-hmm. And the adventures we had when one of the 5 rickshaws would break down and we all stuck together, of course. So, mm-hmm. We'd have to get out and push it to a nearest garage, and then all the mechanics would come and help. And the photos we've got of that is just, memories. So that was, but you never knew where you were going to sleep at night because you never knew how far
you don't know how far you can get. That's right. Yeah.
And sometimes we ended up, we tried not to drive after dark, mm-hmm. which on the day one went out of the window. We just got, lost, and we were, driving at night, and there were big goods trucks going all around us, and we're kids and goats and different animals all around. So, yeah, and we went through the middle of Mumbai as well.
Oh, wow. Well, that would have taken a week anyway.
We had one luxury hotel we really desperately wanted to get to, and that was like a real treat hotel, that one. And so we thought, right, that's our motivation. We are going to go through Mumbai.
Mm-hmm. Fair enough. Okay, so going back, so thank you for sharing that story. I'm going to have to put that on my bucket list. I'm waiting to go back to India. Unfortunately, my child doesn't want to join me. So I'm going to have to wait a little while before I can get back. Let's do it. So getting back, so you've sold your business, you're sort of 3 months in and you're going like, right, now what? And so you've been working with your coach.
Yeah.
And so then what did success start looking like then?
Well, then this inkling of an idea starts appearing in my mind. I have always had an affinity with Morocco. I don't know why. It's something.
Well, we do know why, because of that first trip you did. You told us about it.
That's a good. And my honeymoon as well. Honeymoon. I don't know. And also it was untouched by any work travel. So for me, it was like a country off limits to work. Mm-hmm. And only therefore massive enjoyment, and just that I still feel that huge evocative feeling of the country. Mm-hmm. So as we're discussing all these memories and things, suddenly the idea starts to form about, well, I've always kind of had a transformation through travel when I am at a crossroads. Mm-hmm. I've always gone for adventure, something really, well, I think I've put it down to several things. One is going out of your comfort zone. That's so important. Mm-hmm. Disconnecting to everything that's familiar with your own life. These days, having a digital detox as well
is so
important, right? And all of these learning how to trust yourself and your mm-hmm. intuition and the people that are supporting you. Mm-hmm. So I started thinking about how could I actually, you know, pull a journey together that feels, that does all of those things and more, and also gives such a different travel experience that is difficult to find out there, because yes. this has been a trip in the back of my mind that I've wanted to do for years. I've mm-hmm. searched all the main, you know, travel companies, yeah. don't do anything quite like this, you know, and I've that's why I've never done it. So I thought, let's just create it then. Let me just create it. So I jumped on a plane in, I think the first one was in February or March mm-hmm. for my first kind of recce. Yeah. And I'd done some internet research before, and I'd thought about experiences that would mean a huge amount to me in that journey. And because I don't want to give everything away on this podcast.
No, of course not. Because
actually a lot of the transformation of this trip is the not knowing what
it's
you're
the
doing.
Not knowing. Just, yep. It's just the trust. Of, yeah.
Yeah. It's the trust that I've got all the details covered and, mm-hmm. you know, we're going to have an awesome time together. But, you know, I spend a lot of time with the people who are interested in this journey. First of all, I give them some probing questions. Mm-hmm. There, you know, into what's going on with them at the moment. I'm really looking for, you know, expansion-minded women who are maybe a little bit stuck, you know, a little bit stuck in where they are right now. I mean, I'm 57, I don't mind saying it, and I've noticed that a lot of people who are, you know, mid-40s upwards, and I've talked to 40-year-olds, I've talked to 70-year-olds interested in this trip. And the common theme is, you know, you end up, maybe you're a backpacker in your 20s, you had amazing, you know, memories and, you know, vivid memories back then. Then, of course, your career or your family life or, you know, life gets going. And then, you know, maybe 20 years later when the kids are starting to, you know, head off and find their own way in the world, it's almost time for a reinvention of yourself. The more I speak to women of my kind of age group and younger and older, I hear that they're looking for, you know, they've lost that magical kind of sparkle of those memories that they had when they were in their 20s. Mm. The other thing that a lot of women have told me is they've started to feel, and this breaks my heart thinking about this, but I can understand it. They've start to feel like their world is ever so slightly shrinking, you know, mm-hmm. and that, you know, life is moving on, but the kids maybe have moved away, or the career path mm-hmm. has changed or slowed down, or they're just not getting the same enjoyment out of it as they used mm-hmm. to. And they start to feel a little bit more invisible somehow. It's almost like going to a crowded bar to ask for a drink, and everyone else is getting served, you know, around you, and they're just not.
And look, the reality is that the women of our age, you know, who perhaps once upon a time would be able to stop people in their tracks when we walk into a bar, are rarely able to do that anymore. It's still possible. But not to the same degree, you know, that's the way our society sort of values the youth, right?
Right, exactly. And you know, and that can be frustrating, or it can make you think about things in a different way. So a lot of the women who are kind of attracted to this are ones that, I don't want to say they want to get their mojo back, but it kind of is a little bit of that.
And hey, that's a fantastic thing to do, you know. I work on getting my mojo back every morning, you know.
Yeah, well, exactly. You know, they want to be the most interesting person in the room. They want to have this. They want to have, you know, all of this excitement on the horizon, and they know that they're going to grow from it, and the ideas will come to them.
Yeah.
You know, so essentially what I do obviously reveal about this trip is it's been a lifelong dream of mine to do a really authentic walking with nomads camel caravan across the Sahara Desert.
Beautiful.
And that's basically what we're doing. We're not riding camels in a sort of touristic way. We're
I've ridden a camel. Not so comfortable, you know.
Not so comfortable. I've done it too. India, it's
not so comfortable. It's fine for half an hour or so, but that's about it.
Yeah, Exactly. But, you know, it's basically a 2-week experience, and it's 7 days of actually walking in the middle there. And we're going to a place that's quite remote. You know, it's not where all the, again, the groups of tourists go to do their 1-day trips. Mm-hmm. So it's really authentic. We're going with guides from this desert area. So their families, you know, they know all the background.
Yeah.
We'll be eating the food that they cook. Excuse me. And really push boundaries in every single way imaginable, as you can imagine. You know, the weather is Mother Nature. Who knows what's going to happen? You know, there could be sandstorms. It could be hot. It could be cold. I mean, hopefully I've chosen well. Mm-hmm. The temperature is going to be just perfect for this. So the first one's off in November.
Sounds amazing. February,
really. Yeah. So that's where I'm moving to the next stage.
Which is amazing. And so looking back on your career to date, what are the three things that people can take away, I think, you know, that can other people can apply in their life and their journeys that they can learn from you? What do you think? What are the top three things that you think your life could teach others?
Well, I would say, I mean, from my earlier life, I think I would say, do not stagnate. Mm-hmm. Move yourself. I mean, for me, I changed jobs or companies every 3 to 4 years. Mm-hmm. I know that's not everybody, but I did. And I found that my career as a result of that, including salary, but, you know, all everything, the whole package, but certainly the experience moved immeasurably because I was constantly learning new things and moving and, you know, including location as well as actual career, actual job. So I'd say don't stagnate would be number one. I'd say absolutely try and follow your dreams as much as you can. Really think deeply about that and try and, you know, especially these days where, you know, Zoom meetings and location freedom is so much
so much easier
than it used to be. You know, take advantage of this time. This is really a special time in a lot of ways, but there are so many more advantages and opportunities because of the way that we now live. So don't ever feel sort of trapped in your day-to-day, and then push your boundaries. I mean, really give yourself every few years, give yourself a jolt of something, of an immersion into something that is so different than your regular day-to-day, that it will create new thought patterns in your head. It will create a new joie de vivre, or whatever you want to say.
Love it.
It'll just give you so much more energy to search out something new. And that's what I'm always an advocate for.
Yep. Amazing. What are you reading at the moment? That's not my book.
I'm actually reading a book called Walking with Nomads.
Okay.
it's written by a woman called Alice Morrison. I'm going to give her a plug here. Mm-hmm. And she is this incredible woman that I've met who lives in Morocco in the Atlas Mountains. She's Scottish. Mm-hmm. She's an ex-BBC journalist, mm-hmm. and she's now a travel writer. And you know, she's, you know, becoming a really nice friend of mine, and I find her really inspirational. She takes 6 months across the desert. I mean, she's really, and she's 60. So there you go.
Somebody wants to reach out to you. Do you have a website, or what's the best way to contact you? How do people find you?
Yeah. Okay. So the best way to contact me is to email me at I've just changed my brand name, so it's going to be souladventurers.co.uk.
Okay. I'll put links in the show notes anyway. So that's all good.
Right.
Fabulous. Well, thank you so much for your time. That's been really interesting, and I can see, you know, there's a lot of similarities with your life and mine, a lot of differences, but, you know, quite a few similarities, which is always fun. So thank you, and hopefully we'll meet somewhere in real life.
I would love that, Regina. Yeah, that would be so nice. Right. Well, thank you very much for having me. I really enjoyed it.
Loved it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hope you enjoyed that. So Sarah just wanted me to let you know that she is running two trips this year, 2024. There is one February 11th to 24th, which only has two spaces left. And there is one also in October, October 27th to the November 9th, which is a mixed group, so men and women. And there are a couple of spaces left for that as well. If you'd like to contact Sarah, her information is, or her email is sarah@souladventurers.co.uk.
I hope you enjoyed today's episode and were able to pick out at least one nugget which you can implement straight away. Please subscribe, rate and share this podcast. And remember to check out the website, successstartshere.co, for more information on today's episode, as well as any links and resources mentioned. Keep listening, keep growing, and I'll catch you soon.